Hello, everybody. Abuna asked me today to give you guys a lesson today about boundaries in relationship and how the marriage and the confrontation in marriage and what should we do and how should we act when there's conflict going on in marriage. So we'll try to make it a little bit, you know, detailed and also fun in a way just to make it a little bit, you know, easy on the people to understand. So what is a boundary? What is the definition of a boundary? I think we all know what the word means. If you go look in the dictionary, boundary is something that indicates there is a bound or a limit. There is a line between you and some other person. It's a territory or a line. There's a line that I put around me, and I cannot cross that line. So that's kind of the private dictionary definition of it. Now, it's very important to know what each one of us boundaries is. And actually, each one of us has different boundaries. I could tell, you know, my boundary is this. I don't want people to bother me and do this to me. Other people might say, oh, it's okay if somebody does that to me. I can live with that. That doesn't bother me. So each one has their own capability, and each one has their own boundaries and their own limitations. So we need to understand ourselves to be able to set boundaries for other people. So there's going to be talking about examining yourself and knowing who you are to be able to set those boundaries for yourself. Now, everything in life has boundaries. A country has a boundary. There is, you know, borders on the United States from Mexico or Canada or whatever. Egypt has boundaries. Even a marriage has boundaries. Even in a family, there is boundaries between you and your children. There are some things the children can know and some things they might not know. Even boundaries between your friends that we set and say, you cannot cross this. This is my relationship with you and we cannot pass this line. So there are boundaries in everything that we do in our own life. Now, we all understand, like we said, boundaries that are physical. You know, I can be living in a house and it has a gate and I know that that's my boundary. Nobody can cross that fence. Then they're trespassing. They're on my property. That's something physical that I can see. The hard thing is to know boundaries that are more of a physical boundaries, spiritual boundaries, things that are not seen. These are the boundaries, emotional boundaries. Some people don't understand what is your emotional boundary on the inside. How do I feel? Maybe I get hurt when somebody calls me this, or somebody, if he keeps pushing me this way, I get physically, mentally sick, and so on. So there are different boundaries that we need to understand, which are more important than the material boundaries. Example, the prodigal son. When you look at the prodigal son, what boundary did he have? He was living in his parents' or in his dad's house. He was safeguarded. He was there. He was protected. He was away from all the evil that was going on. So there was a boundary that was set for him. And once he stepped out from that boundary, that's when trouble started. Once he left that place and then he went and started hanging out with the wrong crowd, as soon as he jumped from that boundary or that line, that's when he started hitting trouble. So sometimes we set these boundaries to safeguard us. Okay, his dad set that boundary for him, but he wanted to cross that boundary. In the bank account, we all know how much money we have in our bank accounts. If I ask each one of you, how much do you have in your checking, how much in your saving, and so on. So, and we live within those boundaries. I have this, you know, $5,000. I'm going to live off that $5,000 for the next month. Or I have this money. But some people will come and they will live over that boundary by doing what? By getting a credit card and putting stuff over the limit on the credit card. And now they don't have enough money to cover what's in the credit card. So now they're actually living outside of the boundary that they can afford. They don't have that money and they're living outside that boundary. Now, if you don't set boundaries for yourself, and this is common in everybody's life, if you don't set boundaries for your life, you're going to be looking like one of these people. Picture doesn't look good at all. Anyway, so you're going to look like one of those people. You're going to feel depressed. You're going to have happiness. You know, you're not going to have any. You're going to have heaviness in your life. You're going to have a chip on your shoulder, and you're going to have resentment or anger. Now, each one of us has the right to set boundaries. I'll give you an example. There was this lady. She has two daughters, and they're grown up. They're like in their 30s or so. So one daughter told her mom, Mom, I live like 5 miles from you. You can come over to my house anytime. Anytime you come over, you don't even need to knock. You can just go in the house and feel at home and feel right at home. Another daughter looked at her and said, well, Mom, you know, she also lives 5 miles away. And she said, Mom, please, before you come over, call me. Let me know that you're coming. I'd like to have a, you know, head start knowing that you're coming or not so I can prepare or set myself. Can we say that one of them are wrong or one of them is right? No. Each one is with their own limitation. But of course, if you were the mother and you hear this from one and you hear this from the other, you're going to look at the other one. Excuse me? What do you mean I got to tell you what time I'm going to come and all that? No, but if she respects her daughter's boundaries and understand that that's her boundary of her daughter, that's the way she wants to live her life, you need to respect that. And sometimes we do that as parents. We sometimes jump on the boundaries of our children without even thinking about it. Like our kids might, you know, I do this sometimes. I one time came in and I went to my daughter's room. She's 16 years old. And then she looked at me and she said, "Dad, please next time knock before you walk in." I looked at her and said, "Excuse me? What do you mean knock before I walk in? What do you?" And then you start thinking about it and you say, yeah, she has that right. I mean, I expect when somebody's going to come in my room to knock, I should also do the same. It's not like I'm not going to start saying, oh, she's hiding something and there's going on. It doesn't work like that. When you're at that age and you're getting older and you're getting ready to be in college and so on, you start, hey, you're mature enough, you're old enough. I mean, she's already driving and I'm now going to have to, you know, just walk in on her like that. So we need to understand when our daughters and children are getting older, we need to kind of take a step back and try to understand, yes, we need to set bound. They can have their own boundaries also, and that's not a bad thing. Now, relationships of all kinds can be complicated, okay? The relationship isn't healthy if either person feels overburdened with the bond. And that's what causes sometimes many troubles in the marriage. You can have one person counting on the other person to do everything. One person might be the one who's cleaning and taking the garbage out and doing the dishes and getting the kids ready. And the other person is the type that comes in and, oh, I'm too tired. I've been working all day. And he wants to rest and he does not want to share in the burden. And actually, us as Egyptians, this is kind of, you know, a society mentality is that that's how it is. You know, that's the culture, that the women are the one who does everything and the guy who goes to work and so on. But here, even in the U.S., they have this, you know, equality where a man shares in the burden with the woman. And that's actually the right thing. We need to actually learn to be able to help out and do in everything. Because if that person is taking everything on himself, he's going to start looking like those people in the picture before. It's okay. And this is going to be very difficult for them. Now, the first thing for you to set boundaries is that you need to examine yourself. You cannot just go to your spouse and look at him and say, from now on, this is how it's going to be. I can't take it anymore. You need to actually sit down and examine yourself. What kind of person you are? What is your capability? What is your patience level? What is your aggressive level? What is, you know, your communication level? What is your... You need to sit down and try... Look at your own character first before you go to your spouse and start confronting him about what these boundaries need to be. Because sometimes you'll be going to the person and say, from now on, that's how it's going to be. And that's and the other person is going to look at you and just walk away and it's going to be chaos. So the first thing is you really need to sit down with yourself, examine yourself, and then start setting... And trying to, what is the worst thing that's happening in our relationship that my husband or my wife is taking advantage of me in this, that I can't take it anymore? You need to make these lists and try to understand what they are from even priority. Don't just like make a list of 100 things and go and throw it at the other person and so on. It has to be baby steps. Try to understand what is the most critical thing to you and start that discussion with him. So the first thing you need to do is you sit with yourself and examine yourself. Now, it's the ability to say no to people. And this is one of the hardest things, okay? If somebody's asking you too much, you have to one day say no. And that's hard. Sometimes the mothers who love their kids so much and the kid is asking her to do this and do that, hadri ya habibi wa tahdununa, and she does this and all that. You have to learn to say no to the person. Because if you don't, they're going to take advantage of you for the rest of their life, okay? And that's what happens. I mean, and that's a bad thing. I look at it like when I was growing up, you know, me and my brother, when we were growing up, actually, my mom, she like pampered us like no tomorrow. I'd be sitting with my leg on the table. Can you give us some water? Can you get me this? And then when I got married, I expected the same thing. And I said, and then she looked at me and said, "Naam ya khuya, go get your own water." And then it becomes a very hard life to adjust to because you expected that's how life is going to be all the time. So actually us, if we pamper our kids all the time, we are actually ruining their relationships with the next person that they're going to marry. So we need to, that we are developing their character. So it's extremely important how to raise our children and let them know what the boundaries is. Now, when you say no to a person, it's a hard thing because you know it's going to cause what? Confrontation. He's going to say no, she's going to say no, and then we're going to, you know, go back and forth in it. And confrontation is one of the hardest things you will ever do in your life. I mean, if you think about it, how many of you sometimes try to avoid confrontation as much as you want? I know that when I go and would, you know, sit down and I'm eating in the restaurant and the food tastes horrible and all that and I can't like it, or and the waiter comes and he said, "How's things?" "Oh, it's very good. Thank you very much," you know, and the guy walks away because I don't want to confront the guy. I don't want to start trouble. I don't want, and then of course there's other people who, you know, as soon as this is disgusting, that, you know, you don't take it even to that point either. But you should stand up and speak up for your right. "Yeah, oh, I'm sorry, but, you know, the soup is cold. Can you please take it back?" Or, "No, the meat is a little raw." But us as Egyptians, sometimes we put ourselves in this cave and cage that we're scared to tell people how we feel. And it's very important to be able to confront people. Especially at work. Work is very hard to confront people with. So confrontation is inevitable. Why? As long as we live in a sinful world, as long as the devil is always playing in our minds, as long as we all have different characters, as long as we all have different ideas, as long as we have all different emotions, there's going to be a confrontation. And you have to be ready to confront people. If you just walk away and say, "I'm not going to confront," don't come later and blame the other person. Because now you never really confronted him and told him what was wrong or what was you feeling bad about. So you don't go later and complain about something if you never confronted and let him know what the problem was. So, and if we have a conflict, if there is a relationship and there is a problem between you and your spouse and you keep it hidden and you don't bring it out, it's actually going to kind of like suck the energy out of you. It's going to make your whole life kind of like you're carrying 100 pounds on your shoulder every day. And a lot of people do that. Sometimes there's something that my husband does that I cannot, you know, I want to talk to him about and all that, but why start trouble? Or even the husband, he knows that his wife does something that he can't stand or so on, but he doesn't bring it up because all it's going to bring, it's more trouble, and it's going to bring more fight, and it's going to bring more, so let's just live with it and go on. That's not healthy. You're going to just make the marriage, bigger problems will come later, and everything is going to be hidden on the inside. So you must confront the other person. Confrontation is easier to talk about, but not to the person himself. This is my wife. It's a story of my wife. I remember 10 years ago, she went to go get a haircut on the coiffeur. She goes to the coiffeur. We pay $3.99, she pays $50, but it's... So she went, I can't remember, it was like a wedding or it could have been Easter or Christmas. I can't remember what it was. But so she came back and, you know, she looked so sad and, you know, she's about to cry and stuff. And I said, "What's wrong?" And she goes, "The lady ruined my hair. It looks horrible." So I said, what did you tell the lady? She said, "I told her, thank you very much." I said, "Excuse me, what do you mean? So what else did you do?" She goes, "And then I tipped her and then I walked home." So I told her, and then she starts snapping, and I go, "Why are you telling me, you know, and all these things? Why don't you tell her how you felt?" And that's what's bad about it. It's very hard for me to confront the person himself, but it's very easy for me to go to other people and tell them about that person or what that person did. And that's why we need to kind of get the courage to one day be able to stand up and confront that person. It could be a spouse. It could be somebody at your work who's kind of, you know, bugging you. It could be a student, you know, who's being bullied by another student at school or so on. Any phase in your life, sooner or later, you're going to need to confront that other person. Now, when a confrontation is going to happen, I can guarantee you that the other person is not going to like it. So, I mean, if your husband, let's say, comes back from work and you go up to him and say, "You know, what, you staying up late all the time and not going to sleep and watching the football game till midnight or whatever, and that's not okay from now." Of course, your husband is going to look at you. You know what, honey? You are correct. I never noticed that. I should from now on sleep. It's not going to work like that. He's going to yell back at you, what about you? And he's going to try to bring a laundry of mistakes that you... So get ready when you're going to confront that person. You know that it's going to be, you know, he's not going to take it easy. So we need to be prepared for that, okay? He's going to fight back. He's going to be sarcastic. He's going to judge you. He's going to blame you. And these are things, if you think about it, all of us do. It's very easy if somebody comes and puts me down or look at a weakness I have. The first thing what about you and your parents and what do they do? And you know, you start looking at the weakness they have also and start putting them down because that's kind of the way you feel that you're protected. If somebody points at you, you point back at their mistakes. So expect that's going to happen when a confrontation happens. So what do you need to do if you know that this is going to happen? You must be calm. Okay? So try to, you know, don't be like, you know, I can't wait till he comes home. Then, you know, no. Make sure you're on a calm person. Make sure that you're in a calm mood when you're talking, you know, make yourself get ready when that person comes. I'm going to talk to him calmly. I'm going to explain to him the situation. I'm going to tell him what's happening. If you're going to talk to him in anger and in resentment and in sarcasm and in all that, expect it's not going to solve any of the solution. So the number one step is you must be what? Calm. Second thing is you confront, tell him what the problem is or tell her what the problem is, and that's it. Leave it to God to work it out. Okay? So you tell him what the problem is, and then let's see what the hand of God can do first. Don't expect a solution to happen, you know, the next morning or what. Set realistic goals. Just tell him this is how it happened or tell her this is how it happened. And then, you know, let days go by to see how it's going to happen. And let God work his magic. Okay? Now, if you don't let that person know how you feel, never go later and blame him for the problem. And this is something that sometimes we kind of, you know, take for granted. You know, my life is miserable, I'm not happy, and so on. But what is the reason? Well, he doesn't do this and this and this and this. Well, did you sit with him and explain it to him and all that? No, he should have figured it out on his own. I mean, he can see what I'm doing. No. Because like we said, we've talked about this many times in the meetings, man is from Mars, woman is from Venus, everybody has their own character, everybody has their own personality, we were raised all different. So you need to definitely explain to that person exactly how you feel. And don't come later and blame them. And sometimes we go to confession and say with Abuna, Ya Abuna, then ta mish arif, da. And then Abuna says, well, did you even bring this up? No, I don't need to, Abuna, he already. So we need to make sure that we kind of lay it out to the other person. Anybody know what this story is? It's in Galatians 2. Anybody know what happened in Galatians 2? A confrontation took place in Galatians 2. I think you all know the story. You remember when St. Paul went back to the apostles, okay? And he noticed that he noticed that Peter was doing what? Was eating with the Jews, and he was not eating with the who? With the Gentiles, okay? So he went to him, and Peter went, when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. So what did Peter doing? He was hanging out with the Gentiles, being good and all that, and eating with them. And as soon as some of his Jews friends came, he didn't hang out with the Gentiles anymore because he doesn't want them. Why is he hanging out with those uncircumcised people? So here we notice you have St. Paul. He went and confronted who? St. Peter. St. Peter was actually the head of the apostles at the time. He was the one who lived with Christ. And, you know, St. Paul just was a new apostle coming in to the situation. But here we see somebody who is kind of maybe minor or somebody who's not a head. He's standing in front of somebody who is a head. and telling him, no, what you're doing is what is wrong. And that's what we do sometimes. I mean, that's what we need to do. You can come and stand in your spot. You can even stand in front of your mom or stand in front of your dad and say, no, what this happened is wrong. You guys cannot be doing this or whatever. And it's a hard thing to do. But the Bible tells us we need to do it. This is something that if I see something that's wrong, I need to confront that other person and tell him about it and tell him that what's being done is not right. I like this verse from Psalm 91. It said, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. What does that mean? If you live under the guidance of God and live under his shadow, okay, and follow what rules he says, don't worry about nothing. If you know what you're doing is right, and you go to that other person and tell him that's how it's, you know, that's what you're doing is wrong, that's how you should live your life. And we have examples, you know, from the Bible. We have example of, you know, St. John the Baptist, who stood in front of the king and he told him what you're doing is wrong, that you're sleeping, you know, or marrying your sister's, your brother's wife after he died and so on. All these different stories. He stood for the truth, knowing that he could get killed, knowing that he could go to jail, knowing that all these things, but he stood for the truth, okay? And I don't know if you guys know the story of John Chrysostom. He also stood in front of the queen at the same thing. Now, I will say to the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress. My God, in him I will trust. Put your trust in the Lord and go confront that person or go tell that person what you think is being done is wrong. And the boundaries that you should do should match God's boundary. You can't set a boundary for something that's actually wrong. You can't say, from now on, my boundary is I go out and I come back at midnight. That's my boundary. That's how I'm going to... No, that's not something that God will approve of. Or so, if you're married, you should be at home, taking care of your children, taking care of your spouse, and so on. So when you set a boundary, it has to be a boundary that matches God's what? Boundaries. Okay? Now, take responsibility. Set boundaries and enforce them. And that's one of the hardest things we do. How many times I'll go to, if my child is doing something, you know, if you do this again, I'm going to do this to you. And then 20 minutes later, if you do this again, I'm going to. And it becomes a broken record that your child doesn't even take it for granted what you're saying anymore. So set a boundary. If you're going to say something and mean it, you better do it. Okay? That's very important. Take responsibility, set boundaries, and enforce them. And sometimes we say things without even, you know, thinking about it. Like sometimes, I'm going to take the phone from you for the whole year. And that, you know, and then you know that you're going to give them the phone again in a week or a day or two. So don't go say something even when you're impulsive, knowing that later on you're going to regret it. Because you're not going to take the phone from him for a year. You know, you're paying that yearly contract and you're going to, you know, end up losing the money. But anyway, don't say something, you know, later on you're not going to follow that. Sometimes, you know, and I do that myself, or my wife does that, and sometimes I feel bad because I know later I'm going to take it back. So, or even I go, my wife tells them something, well, you guys are not going to go to, you know, and I'm going, there is no way they're not. If they're not going to go, we're not going to go. Why am I getting punished or whatever? And then, of course, we're all going to end up going. So you need to understand when you're saying something that it is something that's realistic, that it's something that's going to be done, and it's something that your child will be able to believe and trust that you're going to follow through. I think somebody gave an example where, you know, and this is similar with my son. Like my son Joseph, he, you know, an alarm in the morning is not going to wake him up. You got to take the alarm and hit him upside the head with it so he can wake up when it's ringing, you know, nonstop. So for him to catch the bus, I have to get up and I have to put, you know, and then many times he misses the bus and I go, you're going to walk. And then I end up taking the car and I'm driving him. So one day, I decided to make him walk for 3 miles from my house to the school. He never missed the alarm the next, you know, after that. So if you are going to say something, follow it. But he knew every time I was telling him that, and then, oh, that is going to drive me anyway, even. So he goes back to sleep and knows that there is not. But if you are going to say something, follow it and follow that, what you're about to enforce it. Now, help people. If people come and ask for help, you know, help them. You have a boundary of how much you can help people. And that's a problem that we have. But don't destroy your own life. And this happens sometimes where, let's say, you know, if I have, you know, I'll give you an example. My mother, you know, about 10 years ago, my aunt, which is my mom's sister, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And it started getting, you know, more serious, to the point that we noticed it's going to get dangerous, that she has to have professional somebody watching her 24 hours. I mean, it was to the point where, you know, she could open the door and walk out in the middle of the street at night while we're sleeping, or could wake up and turn on, you know, the oven or the stove or something, you know. So my dad started telling my mom, you know, she needs to go to a nursing home or needs to a hospital or something. And my mom was, no, she's my younger sister. I'm going to take care of her for the rest of my life. Sometimes you need to kind of say, no, you got to set a boundary. You cannot just say, I'm going to, you know, live my whole life taking care of that person. That's going to be my main. No, sometimes that's not the reason for your life. And the problem is, like, sometimes whenever we have somebody in a family, God forbid, who's, let's say, a drug addict, it's very bad, because sometimes the mother will take care of that child and she will spend time with him and, you know, make sure that he, you know, he goes to, you know, a drug alcoholic anonymous and all that. And then he comes back and later he might go back again. And later, and the problem is, if that person doesn't want to get cured, everything that you're doing is considered a waste of time. Our Lord Jesus Christ helped people. Okay? Nobody can ever say that Christ did not help people, and we're supposed to help people. But those people must first be willing to be helped. What story in the gospel? Christ went to somebody and asked them, do you want me to help you? Huh? What story is that?
Marid
Bit Hazda. Okay. The paralyzed man for 38 years. Okay. We all know the story. The story of this man, he's sitting by the lake or the birka or, you know, and for 38 years, he's sitting there. Christ comes up to him, and what is the first question he asked him? He said, do you want to be healed? Put yourself in that man's, you know, position. He's probably thinking, what kind of question is that? What do you mean, do I want to be healed? I've been sitting here for 38 years, paralyzed. I can't. But why do you think Christ asked him that question? I mean, that's, if you think about it, that question is kind of real strange. Because you first have to be wanting to be healed before somebody will help you. If you are a drug addict, you know, your parents are not going to help you. You know, all these hospitals and all, they're not going to help you unless you want to be helped. Because you can go through all this and then later on come back to that same addiction and same situation again. And when Christ told them, do you want to be healed? Okay, what was he talking about? This guy was paralyzed for 38 years. We don't know what was the cause of his you know, why was he paralyzed? It must have been for some reason because of a sin. Right? Because Christ at the end told him, your sins are forgiven. That sin could be alcoholic. It could be drugs that caused him to say it later on, he become paralyzed and so on. We don't know exactly. But for Christ to first heal him, he first have to cure what? His sin. He has to first cure the addiction that he has. And let's look at how the guy answered the question. The guy said, when he asked him, do you want to be healed? What was his answer? He started saying, well, I have nobody to come and push me in the lake, and I'm sitting here, and when the angel comes, and he started giving excuses. He started blaming other people. I'm sitting here. It's not because of my sin. It's not because maybe I took drugs. It's not because I took out. Maybe I lived a very bad life. It caused me to do this. No, I'm sitting here stuck because none of the people around me are pushing me in the water. So now he's putting the blame on who? On others. And that's what a drug addict usually does. The drug addict will try putting, you know, he'll never blame himself. He'll start pushing the blame and fingering everybody else around him. Oh, it's my friends who did this to me. Oh, it's because of my parents were always pushing me and yelling at me. So sometimes we kind of put the blame on others. So we need to pay attention to that very well. That's what Christ asked him. He said, do you want to be healed? So know yourself. It's very important that you first treat yourself and then treat others. If you have somebody in your family who's an addict, or if you have somebody who has a problem, or if your husband is very, you know, the kids are so dependent on you, you first have to take care of yourself before you take care of the other people. And that's exactly why, you know, they tell you when you're sitting in an airplane and, you know, the airplane is about to fall down or whatever, as soon as that mask comes down, what are you supposed to do? Put it on yourself first. Sometimes, well, my kids for what? No, take care of yourself first to be able to take care of other people. I remember one time for my wife's birthday, I took her on, like, a friend of mine had his own, single-engine plane. And he decided to take us to Galveston. We flew from here to Galveston for her birthday. The good old days. We don't do that stuff anymore. But so anyway, so the guy sat in the front with her. It's only a 4-seater plane. So he was sitting in the front with her. And, you know, and we all had those headphones on our ears so we can communicate and stuff. And I'm sitting in the back by myself. I'm going, what kind of, you know, birthday gift is this? I'm bored in the back, can't see nothing. And they're, you know, sitting and watching the view and stuff. And the guy, you know, before he starts giving that, he started giving us instructions. And he said, you know, well, we got to do this and all. And then he goes, if anything happened while we're flying and all that, the way it works is we open the door and the people in the back seat jump first. And then the people in the first, you know, and I'm sitting in the front. So I started looking, wait a minute, you know, this story doesn't. So I go, so wait a minute. And the guy goes, it happened one time where as soon as the guy in the back jumped, he figured what the problem is and he fixed the plane. And then, you know. That was a joke. All right. So understand what you are worth, okay? Because if you're not going to be able to take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to take care of others first. So know what your needs first, and then after that, start taking care of your husband or your spouse's needs or your wife's. Start taking care of your children's needs and all. But the first most important thing is take care of yourself first. And that's not selfishness. Don't think of that as being, you're going to have to be healthy. You're going to have mental capability. You're going to have to be a strong person to be able to raise the family and so on. So you have to take care of your emotional needs, your physical needs, and your mental needs. And like I said before, if you pamper someone, they will expect it. Now, marriage. How do we act during the engagement? Let's all go back. They remember. She knows what I'm talking about. Okay, I said this before in the servants' meeting. All of us remember how the life of the engagement was. It's the best time of your life, of course, okay? It's, you know, you have the husband, you know, the guy opening the door for you, تفضل يا حياتي, and all that, and then, you know, and then he hold the chair for you before you sit for dinner and lunch, and, you know, فاكر الأيام دي مهيبة. Notice this guy is opening the door for the lady and holding the umbrella for her in the rain and so on. And this is what's bad about it. What's bad about it is during the engagement, we live this fake life. We're just trying to put on an act that, you know, that's my character. That's how I really am. And then once you get married, it's downhill from here. Okay? You'll never see this. How many of you who are married now, your husband, you know, still does this? Okay? I can say my... Peter does this? Okay? Most of the guys, I'll say most, not every... Most of the guys don't do this anymore, right? But maybe during the engagement, you'll know. And the wife is expecting him to do this because this is what she got used to and all that. But sometimes she'll think of it, it's more of an act. It's more of a, you know, putting on a show or whatever just to get married. And once you get married, it changes. It's like now I'm, you know, when my wife comes out to me and she said, honey, aren't you going to get the door for me? What I do is I usually kind of, you know, click the alarm and say, it's open, honey. You can get in now, you know. So the story of the 5 years of marriage, and I said it to some of you, and, you know, some of you have heard it before and some of you haven't. But so this is exactly how marriage is. The 5 years of marriage. In the first year, like after the honeymoon and you're married with your wife will be sitting and she's going to go, you know, and she'll cough and stuff. And the first thing is you're going to say is, honey, do you want me to take you to the emergency room? I can get the car started right now, and, you know, and all that. That's like the first year of marriage. In the second year of marriage, the wife will, you know, cough and stuff. He's going to look at her and say, honey, do you want me to go get a doctor and make an appointment and I'll drive you to the doctor and so on. Second year of marriage. Third year, she's going to you know, so he's going to look at her. Honey, do you want me on my way back from work to stop by Walgreens and get you, you know, some Excedrin or a couple of pills for you to feel better? That's the third year of marriage, okay? Fourth year of marriage. honey, after you cook and put the kids to sleep, take a couple of pills before you go to sleep and stuff, you know. And then the fifth years of marriage is, will you please be quiet? I'm trying to watch the football game, you know. That's the fifth year of marriage, so. But that's exactly how sometimes our marriage is, so. All the time? Get some cough medicine. Anybody know what this story of? Loud. The Good Samaritan. Why am I bringing the Good Samaritan when I'm talking about boundaries? So let's examine this story, okay? You can be stretched too far, okay? But you have to go on with life. And this is something we don't pay attention to when we look at the story of the Good Samaritan. We know the story, Good Samaritan. There was this guy who was walking in the field, you know, and then he got beat up by some, you know, robbers and so on. And then a Levite came and left him alone. A priest came and left him alone. And finally, a Good Samaritan came, and he took care of him and, you know, put him on his horse and washed his wounds and so on and took him to an inn and kept him. And he gave the inn, you know, guy $2, and he said, take care of him and I'll come back later and so on. First of all, can anybody say what that guy did is not enough? He did so much. And you notice, you know, one thing when you contemplate about the story is, you notice that when Christ gave the parable, he talked exactly about all three. He said that the first guy was a priest, the second guy was a Levite, and this guy was a Samaritan. The only guy he never talked about or mentioned who was what? He's the wounded guy. And the reason is, it could be any one of us. Any one of us could fall in sin. That's why he didn't specify who that person is or so on. So, but then this Good Samaritan, who's considered an enemy to this person, okay, he did all these things to him, which is great. But you notice what he did after that? He took him to an inn, and then he gave the guy some money, and he said, now I have to go on what? With my life. Each one of us sometimes will do things, but then we can't let go. We sometimes want to help people, and we want to keep helping that person. And we don't want to just step back and let that person take care of himself. Sometimes we do that with our kids. I'll take care of my son, and I'll watch him. And then when he gets older, I'm still going to watch him. And we do that sometimes even like, you know, when you see kids, like, you know, they want to go to college. And maybe they live 10 minutes away from campus. And some of the parents are going to say, I want my son next to me here all the time or whatever. And some other parents will say, no, I want him to go live in campus so he can be independent, so he can understand how life works, he can see the life and all that. I put my trust in my son and I see what he's going to do and so on. That's exactly what we need to learn. At one point, you're going to have to learn to what? Let go. And this is a problem sometimes with like mother-in-laws. You know, once your daughter gets married or your son gets married to the other person, she doesn't want to let go. She wants to get involved and she wants to be in the relationship and she wants to, and you know, we see all these, you know, stereotyping of what a father-in-law or a mother-in-law is. But this is the idea from the story from the Good Samaritan. It teaches you that at one point you need to what? Go on with your life and let go and put your trust in God and what he's going to do. So what did the Good Samaritan, we said? We are all bodies of Christ. We all help each other when we need help. But then we share in the burden. He gave that guy in the inn and told him, take care of that person. So it's not just me anymore. He's letting somebody else also share in the burden of the help. And what does he do also? He delegates. I'm going to leave now and you kind of take over and take care of it and I'll come back later. It's like here in the church. We do that all the time. I mean, we see the priest who has so many different, you know, responsibilities. And all, he starts delegating. I'll give the servants to this person. I'll give the deacons to this person. I'll give the... And there is nothing wrong with delegating. Because if you don't do that, you're going to overburden yourself. And we do that with our family sometimes. Like a mother, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to do the cooking. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And she doesn't want to delegate. She doesn't want the father to get involved. She doesn't want the kids to get... She thinks that she can do it all. And that's when you start burning yourself. And you know, that's like my wife. She's a nurse, but she wanted to choose to be an ER nurse. And I keep telling her, why would you want to be an ER nurse? That's like the most stressful nurse. It's like whenever I call her at work or whatever, oh, I don't have 2 minutes to talk to you. I got to go see the patient and stuff. And I'm sitting in my office, you know, with leg crossed and drinking coffee and all. And I'm going, why would somebody put himself in that? But some people enjoy and they get, you know, the pleasure of what that, what's the term? Now it has a different term, but they like that, you know, fast life or that fast lane. They want, you know, everything. They don't want things to be slow. They want everything to be, they like the rush. They want that rush life or whatever. But the bad thing about it, rush life might be great, but sooner or later you will what? You will get burned. Some people like to always do things last minute. I know people who love, you know, oh, I've got 10 minutes now to get dressed. He'll get dressed or whatever. Or, oh, I got to be at the place in 20 minutes. I'll leave 15 minutes later and I'll drive fast. They love that rush hour. They love that rush life. But that's when you kind of burn yourself sooner or later. Take it easy. Slow down. Stay away from this busy life. I remember one guy, I gave a lesson before on busyness and how life is busy and stuff. One guy was one time saying, one day, kid, try to live a slow life. One time, wake up in the morning, say, I'm going to get up, leave real late today. What the heck? I'm, you know, when you come to the church, I'm going to park in the last parking lot and just walk to the church, okay, and enjoy the view and all. Just one day, kid, enjoy yourself and relax and look around you and look at the beauty of what God had created. But we're too busy to do 100 things. I went with my wife to Kroger because we were going to get some ice cream for the children. And we walked in the aisle and they had like 350 different ice cream flavors. I started looking at each one of them, trying to read and understand. Mango mixed with papaya or ice cream or coffee. Now there's different kinds. Life is like so many choices. We don't even have time to make up our mind. I was looking on my computer, not my computer, my TV guide. There is 500 channels. And all we do is sit and push from one channel. We don't want to watch one thing. We just want to keep going and seeing what is everything on all the other channels. That's my life, you know. Uh-oh. And if there is a commercial, God for, you know, you got to turn to another thing. There is no patience in life at all. And so make sure don't get shared the burden and delegate in what you do in life. Now, setting boundaries is a good way to develop and maintain trust, okay? And it's going to prevent disputes. Now, it's a good idea to set a firm boundary, okay? And this is one bad thing about women. Women don't like to tell you exactly how it is. They like to give you, oh, I like, you'll be walking around, oh, that, you know, that dress looks nice, you know. Okay, and tell him, honey, I like that dress. Can you please get me that dress, okay? Don't just, you know, clear, yes. Don't set hints and clues and all that. You get yourself, then the guy is going to fall in trouble later on and all. Or, you know, if for the anniversary or the birthday and all, and they give hints and all. Like for my birthday or my wife's birthday, I always get her, you know, something real nice and all. For my birthday, she always gets me like 2 tickets to the musical. And I hate the musical. I can't even stand the music. You know, it's like, who's the gift for, me or her? But she's not here, so it's all good, yeah. Now, when I say set a boundary, one thing I want to make sure that we all understand this, I'm not talking about a prenuptial, okay? All of you know what a prenuptial is. A prenuptial is before you get married, you tell the person, hey, if we get a divorce, this is mine and this is yours, you know? That's a very common thing in America and, you know, and all that, a prenup. So why is a prenuptial a bad thing, or why is it, you know, and some people, oh, what's wrong? Prenuptial means you are starting the relationship based on no trust. Instead of me saying, I'm going to come with you and this marriage is going to work, you're saying, I'm going to come with you. And if this marriage doesn't work, you do this. And so it's really based on, there is not trust from the beginning. Okay, and that's one thing that, you know, a lot of people and the Americans always have that problem and so on. Now, identify with your marriage. What things need boundaries? And these are some of the examples. Curfew, okay? Some people might enjoy, you know, staying up late. The Monday night football game, it finishes at midnight. Or, lot of things. You have to set a boundary. Honey, from now on, we need to sleep at 10:30, okay? He might not like it. He might not, you know, he might not. But you're telling him, this is what I want. And if he doesn't do it, keep restating your boundary. And sooner or later, you know, he's going to see how you feel about it. No, but I'm saying, let's say she doesn't like to go to bed by herself. It's not a good idea that she sleeps, let's say, at 10 o'clock and he's staying up till 12:30 or whatever, instead of them, let's say, being together, praying together and going to sleep or something. So, I mean, that's what, and if you think about it, it's not a really hard thing to do. You know, it's not, he could actually come, how about if I do it one day a week or one, I mean, there's negotiations and there's things, but let him know that this is something that you, what, you don't like, okay? State it and let him know. It's an easy thing, okay? Or work restrictions or, you know, relationship with friends. Let's say, oh, I don't like that person that you hang out with all the time. He's a bad influence on you. Or this person, you know, he always, you know, he talks, or he always wants to, you know, I don't like the way he, and you talk to him, talk to your spouse about it, that this is how you feel. If you don't tell him that and he keeps hanging out with that person, it's going to what? He'll never know that that's how you felt about him. And it always starts with baby steps, okay? Whenever you set boundaries, first start out with small boundaries. Like we said, curfews, what, you know, friends and all. And then later on, move to the big boundaries, like taking the garbage out and like, you know. After that, move to the big boundaries where it has to do with, you know, raising the children in a special way. It has to do with, you know, how we deal with our money or our finances and so on. So you take baby steps. And that is going to make the relationship or the bond in your marriage work. And then later on, you move to bigger decisions. So when I said sit and examine yourself, there are different types of people. And you need to look at these people and see which one do you belong to. So the first one is called the compliant person. This person, yes to everything. You go to him, honey, can you get, yes. Can you do this for me? Yes. Can you, you know, and they do not have the ability to say no. And some people are like that. Some people are not able to say no. You know, they're so nice. They're so sweet that when you ask them to do something, oh, okay. You know, I remember when I was, another story I remember when, you know, when I was, me and my brother, we were very spoiled when we were young. So we used to go to the school. And my mom and dad, always whenever we walk from the school back to the home, my mom and dad would carry the school bag for us when we're, you know. So one time, they went on a trip, and they brought my grandmother to take care of us one day. So we're walking, and then, you know, we looked at her and said, can you carry the bags for us, right? So she looked at us and said, what are you talking about? So she carried the bag, and it's so heavy, so she threw it on the floor, and she kept walking. And then when my parents came home, she told them, what are you guys doing? You know, why are you carrying their bags for? They're like, you know, 9 and 10 years old. They're not like 4 or 5 years old. So sometimes whenever you're pampered, whenever, you know, you can't say no. And you expect that. And some people are like that. So if you're that type of person, examine yourself. Or you could be the guilty person. You are always harsh on yourself and you always feel that when something happens, it's because of what? It's your fault. Oh, and maybe I was, yeah, maybe هو متضايق وزعلان عشان انا الاكل النهارده ما كانش حلو. Or maybe he's, you know, hey, Peter بيعمل كده. Okay, so these are kind of people, and yeah, St. Paul described these people are people of weak conscience. So you could be the compliant person, or you could be the guilty person. You could be the fearful person, okay? The guy is the sucker, no? Okay. And these are the ones who are fearful of being accepted. Sometimes these are the people who, you know, if I want to belong to this people, I want to belong with that, so I'll do exactly what they say and all that, and it's considered the fearful person, okay? Or the avoidance person. This is kind of like me. I call it the, cool as cucumber. If I see my wife, I'm like, okay, salama, and I walk away and, you know, I'm cool that way, whatever. It gives you the concept, actually, of being independent, okay? But actually, it's kind of your way hiding away from the problem, okay? You're not even dealing with the problem, okay? You refuse help either out of feeling of unworthiness or hotness. And then there is the controlling person, okay? These cannot take a no. If you come up to them and say no or whatever, they do what desire and desire others to. And actually, these are very bad people at raising children because they don't expect their children to ever say no to them. OK, Okay? And we actually need our children to say no. Because the Bible itself teaches us to say no. What did the Bible say? The Bible said, let your yes be yes. And let your no be no. So you will say no. Okay? If somebody tells you something, you have to. If you go and tell your kid, I want you to do this, and your kid said, no. What do you mean no? Maybe what you're asking him is beyond his capability. Maybe what you're asking him is a wrong thing to do. Maybe what you're asking him is something that he can, you know, you need to be, because if your son says yes to you all the time, when he grows up, he's going to say yes to everything to other people. People come up to him to drugs? Yes. People come up to him, let's go hang out here? Yes. Because you taught him not to be able to say no. You were so aggressive on raising him that he now has no character of saying the word no himself. And there are two ways that, you know, people, women in one side and men in another side. The women, what do they use when they're controlling? They use manipulation, okay? Women are very manipulative, okay? If you look in the Bible, there's examples on the bottom. Delilah. Delilah was very manipulative with Samson. Okay? Salome. Salome was very manipulative with Herod, the king, okay? And Phetaphor's wife, she was manipulative, wanted to take advantage of Joseph and all. So these are very, and then we know Eve. Eve, hey, I wish in my life. Eve, she went and, you know, she said it was, you know, she went to Adam. So this is, women are, but that doesn't mean that men are also not manipulative. But I'm just saying, most, in general, women are sometimes more manipulative than guys. What do guys are? Guys are more aggressive. They use the fear, you know, this is how he tries to get what he wants. So each one of us try to, this is kind of in the personality and the way the character of the person is. So we said parents should train themselves to accept a no from their children, okay? Children should be trained to say no to bad company and wrong choices. Now here, let's say you have a bound, you know, you confront the other person. A week passes, a month passes, a year passes, and there's no change. What do you do now? Is it hopeless? No. This is what Christ said. He gave the steps of dealing with somebody who's sinning or somebody, you know, you're dealing with that's doing something wrong. And what did he say? He said, if your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault just between you two. And that's what I said. Go confront that person and talk to him. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter be established by a testimony of two or three witnesses. Let's say you go talk to him and you try to convince him and a year pass and all that. It doesn't work. What is Christ saying here? Bring one or two witnesses. Maybe bring your mom or her parents. And some people say, I don't want to get my parents involved in a situation. And this is but let's say it's now the problem is getting growing and it's not being fixed. And now the marriage is going to be about to be destroyed. So the first steps, what Christ is telling us is first, work it out with your husband, one on one. And if you were able to win him over, that's great. If it doesn't work, bring one or two witnesses, okay, to do that. And then if they still refuse, in verse 17, in the tell it to the church. Then you go to Abuna and you confess to Abuna about what's going on and so on. And we sometimes take that for granted. One time I'll go talk to my wife and she doesn't know. 2 days later, Abuna, and you tell him things and you never even gave time for things to work. You never even gave time to see what's going to happen. It's I want the solution now and all that. So Christ is telling you there are steps when you're dealing with people. And when we say take it to the church, you know, who's qualified? I know when you say take it to the church, you don't go take it, let's say, to some of the members of the church and all that. We're talking about taking it, you know, Abuna. I don't know if you guys know him or not, but okay. So go to somebody who has training and hopefully experience in facilitating conflict resolution. And must be comfortable with dysfunctional behavior, and we have a lot of it in this church. So in conclusion, okay, learn how to set boundaries with people, okay? Learn to say no to other people. It's extremely important. At the right place, and the right time to help us conduct a peaceful and fruitful life. And glory be to God forever. Amen.